Good morning, everyone. We're going to convene the Committee on Education at this point. I apologize for our late start. We went over a little bit in K-12 finance just a few minutes ago, considering a really important bill that involves some of our committee members. And so I appreciate the patience. We're going to start with House File 2569, Representative Sawatsky. And Representative Sawatsky moves that House File 2569 be re-referred to the Committee on Government Operations. Representative Sawatsky, good morning.
Mr. Chair, good morning.
Yeah, it feels like good evening.
Okay. We ended last night together, and we're starting the morning together. So thank you, members. I'm Mary Sawatsky, and thank you for hearing House File 2569. And this bill is the result of a request to the Lieutenant Governor from the First Lady from Minnesota to join an interstate compact on education opportunities for military kids. It's supported by Governor Dayton. As a little bit of background, Minnesota is currently one of only four states not currently a member of this compact. And today we have Rick Masters, Brigadier General Stephen Hogan, and Martin Dempsey, who have flown here to testify to support of this bill. And I'll let them introduce themselves and explain the bill.
Wonderful. Thank you, Representative Sawatsky. So the First Lady is not going to testify in a bill this morning. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. I was looking forward to that. So. Good morning. Welcome to the committee, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, committee members. It's a pleasure to be here this morning. My name is Martin Dempsey. I'm the Midwest Region Liaison for the Department of Defense State Liaison Office and the Office of the Secretary of the Deputy Secretary of Defense for Military Community and Family Policy. Our mission is to be a resource to the state policymakers addressing the issues and affect the quality of life of our military and their families. I'm here regarding the education transition of active duty military children. This issue is addressed in language contained in House Bill 2569. The department strongly supports this language. Prior to my current position with the DOD, I served over 24 years in active duty with the United States Air Force. We moved 8 times in 24 years. Our children were in 8 different schools between kindergarten and 12th grade. Our youngest daughter went to 3 different high schools in 4 years, uprooting her senior year for a final move, which made me father of the year in my house. This is not an unusual scenario for military families today. On average, most military children will move at least twice during their high school years, and most will attend 6 to 9 different schools between kindergarten and 12th grade. These military families encounter graduation of their child due to frequent relocations in the course of their service. In 2005, the Department of Defense partnered through the Council of State Governments National Center for Interstate Compacts on this issue. The compact reflects input from policy experts and stakeholders from 18 different organizations, including representatives of parents, teachers, school administrators, military families, and federal, state, and local officials. Participation by states is completely voluntary, but to participate, a state must adopt the compact through the legislation. The language and intent of the compact provide consistency for our military children as they move from state to state and alleviate some of the unneeded hardships they encounter. While military families are often described as a resilient group, the cumulative effects of our military moves and significant parental absences can erode this resilience. Too many of our military children in public schools feel like their classmates and teachers do not understand what they are currently going through. 46 states have currently, as said before, adopted the compact. We are very grateful to Representative Sawatsky for sponsoring and all who are positively considering the approval of this policy as is currently reflected in House Bill 2569. In closing, the compact addresses the challenges and the concerns of our military school-aged children and lessens the emotional impact of moving from school district to school district. Adopting the compact will create a positive impact to our military families, which in essence has a positive impact on our operational readiness and our national defense and is strictly viewed as a retention and readiness issue for our military. One of the highest factors in deciding whether or not a service member continues for a career in military is the quality of education and services available for their children, and any undue hardships placed on them. Adopting the compact is a significant step in the right direction addressing this issue. Thank you, and I stand ready for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Dempsey. Appreciate your testimony today. You'll probably be not surprised to learn that we have folks in the room who have similar experience with that you described, including our very own legislative assistant, Jamal Lundy, who, in fact, did move twice in high school. As a result, I suspect there may be some others in the room as well who had that experience in their families. And I think it's absolutely appropriate that we work to really coordinate services across different jurisdictions to make life a little bit easier for our families who are serving. Are there any questions from committee members at this time for Representative Leidinger?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What about grade school? Does this cover that as well?
Yes, sir. K through 12.
Oh,
and I might. This is a good time to probably address the Council of State Governments. Here is here today, and they can probably answer any technical questions you have a lot better than I can.
Terrific.
My
Representative Leidinger.
My daughter moved four times in those grade schools: Newport, Rhode Island, Tampa, Florida, Monterey, California, and then down to San Diego. Yeah, it does affect the kids, no question. Anything we can do to help them out. It really does affect these kids. It's always finding new friends and I think it was important to me to say a couple of words about this and tell you that I support it.
Thank you.
Terrific. I think we have some other testifiers that will be joining you as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Dempsey. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, sir.
Welcome.
Honorable Chair and members of the committee, my name is Steve Hogan. I serve as the Executive Director of the Military Interstate Children's Compact Commission in cooperation with Council for State Governments out of Lexington, Kentucky. It is indeed an honor to appear for you today to represent the military families that reside in the great state of Minnesota, and also those Minnesota natives that serve this nation worldwide. Military child faces a great many challenges, academically and otherwise, as they move from state to state, an average of six times through grades K to 12, as has been stated previously. This compact seeks to address this aspect of challenge that some would call a hardship with a comprehensive, cooperative, and functional policy of states and collaboration. For this purpose, the compact was enacted in 2008 and has continued to grow, where 46 states, one district, are members, providing assistance to 98% of military children nationwide. It is important to state that the focus is on the interstate transition of these students, with areas of emphasis on enrollment, placement, attendance, eligibility, and graduation. It seeks to provide a common framework and process throughout the member states, addressing those issues mentioned during the transitional time period. It is important to state that the compact is only concerned with the transition in an interstate venue, and rightfully and by design not to impact local standards of instruction or dictate preferential treatment to the military child. Respect of state and local authorities is essential for the proper functioning of the interstate compact. Frequently, state legislatures have had questions and concerns regarding autonomy, necessity, and cost, which, with your permission, I'd like to discuss at this time. Concern number one, does the compact usurp local authorities? My answer to this is absolutely not. By adopting the compact, the state is only giving up the right to act unilaterally in respect to an interstate transition issue where it has no authority to begin with. The compact, again, supports states' responsibilities and the authority in respect to its education policies. What it will do in the case of an interstate problem is to collaborate and communicate with both states involved, the sending state and the receiving state, to identify best case options for all parties involved. Concern number two, why do we need this? We're already doing everything possible to support our military children. Firstly, this is widely acknowledged and you have our thanks for this. To accommodate military children, it is greatly appreciated. However, without being a member of the compact, your influence only goes to the border of the state. Adoption of the compact ensures that Minnesota's investment is protected as these children transfer out of the state or are transferred into the state during their educational career. Simply put, the compact is a bridging agent, and without this connection between the sending and receiving states, even the most progressive efforts inside the state will only build but half of that bridge. Concern number three, how much does it cost? The short answer here is for Minnesota, $2,000 in total. The formula that was used is $1 per military child that resides in the state, but with a caveat to that as a floor and ceiling amount, the floor being $2,000, the ceiling being $60,000. Currently, Minnesota has 1,267 children of active duty service members residing in state, so that qualifies you for the floor amount of $2,000. This annual dues simply allows the national office to pay your commission travel expenses on national business. State council members are not a paid position in any other of the member states, and only those that require the state councils to meet in person will furnish funds for travel. In summary, it is my view that the strength of this compact lies within the complete and national network of professionals whose collaboration ensures that the child is not unfairly advantaged or unfairly penalized because of his status as a military child. Thank you, sir, and I look forward to your questions.
Thank you for your testimony, sir. Why don't we hear from your colleague as well, and then we'll open up for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Rick Masters, and I serve, among other capacities, as general counsel for the Interstate Commission for this compact. And this is an administrative body that consists of a representative from each state, which is a member, so that when you enact the statute, you will have a voice and a seat at the table and a vote on the activities of the commission, which are largely to make sure that these worthy transitional purposes that the representative talked about can be carried out meaningfully and implemented and effectively deployed along with our family members who are moving from place to place, so that this compact can actually be effective and have some teeth as opposed to simply being a resolution to do good work. I am currently involved in other efforts with not only this compact but a number of other compacts affiliated with the Council of State Governments, and have also served for the last 15 years as special counsel to CSG's National Center for Interstate Compacts. Interstate compacts, as many of you know, are a state-based solution as opposed to a solution imposed federally from the top down. And I want to commend the Department of Defense because they said from day one that they agree that this ought to be an issue that is managed at the state level and by the states. Unfortunately, as the general pointed out, one state cannot manage this problem without either having some statutory rubric that has been enacted by Congress or through a cooperative agreement such as a compact that is embedded within your statute. So I think it's important for everybody to understand that if you enact this bill, you are making Minnesota a party to a contract with 46 other states and the District of Columbia, in which you're agreeing to carry out these purposes. Now, how did we arrive at these four areas of transition as opposed to other things that we might do with these children? The Department of Defense bought and paid for a very comprehensive study about 6 years ago by the Johns Hopkins University to study what are the primary problems that are encountered by military families when they move across this country after being deployed by the Department of Defense. And the Johns Hopkins study identified not coincidentally, the four areas that you'll find as the substantive objectives of this compact. And as the representative said, moves are common among those who have sworn an oath to protect and defend the Constitution and become a member of the military. And in fact, statistically, as the general said, most families who make a career of the military move from 6 to 9 times during a career. That's a lot of moves, and when their families have to transfer from one state school district to another, creates a great deal of havoc. And so the four substantive areas that the compact seeks to carry out were identified from this study of military families who actually have to go through these transfer processes. And you'll find in the bill that those four areas are enrollment, eligibility, placement, and graduation. Just to give you a few examples, and not belaboring the point, but so it makes some sense perhaps in terms of specifics, let's take these one at a time, and I'll give you one example in each category. Enrollment, for example. Many times when military members move, it has to be rapidly, and they're under orders to do so, and many times they don't have time to get an original copy or certified copy of the school records. Well, guess what? There are some states where they show up in the local school district and they can't enroll their child because they don't have a certified record. This provision in the compact would allow a Xerox copy or a photocopy to be accepted, and then gives a limited period of time for that officially certified record to be mailed from the sending state. Eligibility. What we're talking about there is students who have to move, but because of the timing and because the Department of Defense didn't realize that the National Honor Society was having its induction ceremony and Johnny or Sally couldn't be present, and so they can't become a member of the National Honor Society because they got there too late. Mm. This bill says if you would be otherwise qualified, you're a 4-point student or a 3.5 student in your terms of your grade point average, but you missed the candlelight induction ceremony, that shouldn't be a bar to allowing you to be a member of that organization. Similarly with athletics. Now, this is a sensitive topic. I realize that in Minnesota, possibly in many other states, the school system and the education department doesn't control the athletic association, but it does make a commitment to try to allow, to the extent possible, to facilitate the opportunities for kids to try out for such things as sports teams, cheerleading, and other squads that they may not get the opportunity to participate in simply because they weren't here at the time the original tryouts occurred. Again, it doesn't force anybody to be added to a team. It simply says if you're otherwise qualified, you ought to have an opportunity if there is a way to do it reasonably. Placement. Here we're talking about things such as courses that were taken in the prior state and aren't given credit in the receiving state. Let's take the example of a student that moves from California to Vermont, and Vermont has a requirement that a student has a course in Vermont history in order to graduate. The student had a course in California history but doesn't get to graduate because they missed that course. The compact asks the school district to see if there is a way to substitute a course that was taken that is equivalent to what is required in the receiving state, and if possible, to allow that to be waived or to give credit for that course. And then finally, graduation. Here again, on-time graduation is one of the most important aspects of a student's career. If you can't graduate with your class, you are stigmatized. And these students in military families are just like any other student. They would like to be able to graduate after 4 years of hard work in high school and 8 years of hard work in the K through 8 or K through 9 years. And so with graduation, it asks a state to try to find a way to accommodate the student by allowing credit for exit exams or end of course exams. I don't know if Minnesota has a test that is required to be passed in order to graduate. We ask you to consider waiving such things if it's possible, if they have taken another normative exam in the state they're coming from that your education department believes is equivalent, that this would give you the opportunity to allow that student to graduate on time. If you have a non-negotiable policy where you simply think in the best interest of the education of students in Minnesota, we can't waive this graduation competency exam, We then ask you as the default position to go back to the sending state and try to work with them to allow the student to get a diploma in the state they came from if it's possible for them to qualify by courses that they've taken here. These are just short examples of what we attempt to do here. As one school superintendent said, the compact legislation gives school officials the ability to say yes to the military families. It gives them some statutory basis to make a reasonable effort to accommodate the needs of these families. We certainly are not asking you to compromise the quality of education in Minnesota, but we do think, as the general said, that you would agree with us that simply because mom or dad has sworn an oath to protect and defend the Constitution, that their child should not be penalized for that. It's not a special opportunity for educational opportunity for kids. It's equal opportunity. We just want to level the playing field, and that's what this bill seeks to do. It does create a commission that has a nominal cost. The general's talked about that, but we would be happy to answer questions if you have them, and thank you so much for your support for military families and for giving us the opportunity to talk to you about this bill today.
Thank you, sir. I think it's very helpful to have the run-through, and so what I'm hearing is a strong message that there's nothing here that creates, my words, a coercive presence relative to any state, that the real philosophy here is how do you facilitate flows of information and ease of being in the learning community as these military children move along. And I suspect you probably have a very collegial atmosphere in this regard. It seems to me that it's so logical. We should have done this a while ago. We're one of the few states. I don't know what other state is not doing it, but I suspect that probably has more to do with the fact that we don't have a major military base in the state. Obviously, we're covering our local guard and active reservists in the state, but I suspect that's probably why. And that probably that leads me to think that in many ways the benefit, quote unquote. Obviously, it's mutual, but the benefit really is going to have a lot to do with many of our families moving to other states where you've got some major military installations and Minnesotans are serving in those places. Am I correct?
Yeah, those are fair statements, and I think you're entirely accurate across the board, Mr. Chair. The other states that are the only others that have not joined the compact yet are Oregon, New Hampshire, and New York. In addition to Minnesota, so, but not coincidentally, we have been making similar appearances in all of those states, and will be traveling to New York within the next 30 days. And all four legislatures are considering the bill, and we would love to be able to welcome Minnesota and the other three states to the table at our next annual meeting later this year.
Well, sir, hopefully you can you'll be able to leverage our participation. I'm sure they're going to want to follow our lead.
Absolutely, so. Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair,
yeah, Representative.
If they would like me to come and help you facilitate this in the other three states, I'd be happy to.
Members, I'm hearing a request for per diem. Are there any questions for the general and for Mr. Masters? Representative Erickson.
I was just about to comment, Representative Swatsky, they're all cold weather states, so your junket won't be that great.
I was in 8 inches of snow in New Hampshire and wasn't sure I could get out of there, so I did, thankfully. So.
Very well. Any other questions? I would like to hear just briefly from the department if they would be willing to come forward. So thank you, General, and thank you, Mr. Masters, for being with us here this morning.
Thank you.
And so just kind of on the more, you know, a drier side of work, you know, just a practical, if you can share a little bit in terms of the practicalities of what this would mean. The bill references the P20 Council. There is a small formulaic, expenditure here. Just kind of fill us in on what the department is thinking in terms of effectively carrying out the mandates here if we proceed with this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Darren Cordy. I'm with the Department of Education, Minnesota Department of Education. So what the compact calls for is for each state to adopt or create a state advisory council. And this being the unsession, we wanted to take a look at other councils that already exist and see if there were maybe committees that were already meeting that could fulfill the duties of the State Advisory Council under the compact. So the one that we arrived at, that we looked at, was the P20 Council. As far as the membership that's called for in the compact, every single one of the members that are required in the compact, we already have members on the P20 Council, with the exception of a representative from the military community. So what this bill does in Section 1 is amends the P20 membership to say, you know, they're going to serve as our state council for the interstate compact, and the chair will serve as the compact commissioner. As you know, that chair rotates between us and between the Department of Education as well as higher ed and the MNSCU system. But, you know, I think that, you know, the other commissioners and the chancellor would also be very capable compact commissioners. And it also requires that there be a representative from a military installation appointed by the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard. As far as the duties in the compact for school districts, I think that one of the other reasons why Minnesota hasn't joined this in the past, aside from the fact that we do have a small active duty population, is that our schools are already doing a lot of these things, that they are doing a great job handling our military children when they're coming in from out of state. But that being said, you know, we think it's time to kind of formalize it in the compact itself. I also wanted to turn your attention to Section 3, which isn't Section 3 of the bill, which is on page 19, which isn't a part of the compact itself. This is a separate provision that was brought forth between us and between the Minnesota National Guard and Beyond the Yellow Ribbon folks to give districts a tool in which they might be able to recognize students who are in their schools who are military connected. Now, this isn't limited to active duty folks either. It's if you have an immediate family member, including a parent or sibling, who are currently in the armed forces, either as a reservist, on active duty, or recently retired. So this is separate from the compact. This is different from the duties of the compact commission, but this just gives districts, what we've heard from the Minnesota National Guard is that they have a lot of resources. Beyond the Yellow Ribbon has a lot of resources that they can provide to school districts and to families to assist these military families, but they don't have a really good tool of identifying where those students are. So this allows districts and asks them in the ordinary course of updating their enrollment forms to put a box on there that a student can voluntarily check to just identify themselves as military connected, which would allow the districts to provide them with those resources that are out there in the community. And aside from that, I think that covers kind of the technical aspects of the bill, but if there's questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you, Mr. Corte. And Section 3 just reminds me of how Minnesotans are constantly thinking ahead and how to make a good idea even better. Representative Sawoski, there are 20 pages in this bill, but and typically we tend to blanch when bills get a little bit this long, but frankly, most of this really is just the inserting the language of the compact into our state statute, as we've done with a number of other compacts and partnerships that we have nationwide. Are there any questions for the department? Representative Wills? Representative Wills.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you for the explanation of Section 3. And you also referenced the P20 Council. So I have two questions. First, if you could elaborate on what the P20 Council is, what their duties and responsibilities are, when it started, that type of thing. And then I'll have another question after that.
Mr. Corporal.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wills, I don't have the date in front of me when it actually started, but it's been around for, it was in existence as what was called the P16 Council for a while prior to being put into statute, and then it was put into statute, I want to say maybe 6-7 years ago, give or take, and it's an education partnership organization with stakeholders from the education community, from the K-12 education community, the pre-K-12 education community, and the higher education community to create a more streamlined system of services to children between the, kind of all the different systems that exist out there. I think the idea behind it was that there were a lot of different systems operating in silos, as we say, and that this was an opportunity to get everybody to the table and meet on a regular basis and to have those conversations about the ways that they can improve services for kids throughout the entire spectrum of their education as well as into adulthood. There's also, I believe, a report that they produce every year that, that kind of captures that. I know that there's members of the legislature that also sit on that commission, or I mean on that partnership, I should say.
And Representative Wills, I have some history myself with it. This was initially the initiative of the Minsky Chancellor at the time, Chancellor McCormick, and copied or yeah, copied after, modeled after, rather. Similar councils that were being developed across the nation. He came to us from the state of Pennsylvania, where they developed a very effective P20 council. And initially, the purpose or the methodology was just to collegially get together and create, you know, these seamless interplay among these different systems. And in 2009, I'm informed by our legal counsel. A bill came forward to formalize them in state statute, and we do have members of the legislature currently serving on it, although I'm not recalling who they are at this moment. I think Representative Poppy from Austin serves on it, as well as a few others. Representative Wills.
So, thank you. So just a quick follow-up on that, and then I have the other question. Is there a website where we could learn more about this and see those reports?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wills, I believe there is. Let me see if I can get that for you. I don't know it off the top of my head, but we'll definitely get that to you.
Wonderful. Thank you. And Mr. Chair, just one more question. I really appreciate the explanation on the P20 Council. I just hadn't heard about that before, so that's very helpful. And then on the Section 3, just a question on the data that would be collected if students check off this box. Would the Departments of Military Affairs and Veterans Affairs be able to use that information to have a better opportunity to reach out to these families and make resources available to them, or is there any relationship with the departments?
Mr. Cortez.
I think the idea here, Mr. Chair and Representative Wills, if you look at paragraph B, which is on the last page there, it is classified as private data. So it's not something that's going to be publicly distributed among the different, you know, out of the school district to a different agency. But what it would allow is for the Minnesota National Guard, the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon folks, as they're going around and soliciting their services to districts, that districts would have that information and you know, could work with the students to put them in touch with these services. I don't think we envision a situation where that information is being given over to outside agencies and then those agencies kind of are tracking down those kids. I mean, we understand that there is some sensitivity with that information, so we want to keep it private, but also want to make sure that there's a conduit there for those students to get access to the services that are available to them.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I really appreciate that clarification, because I think it's really important to make sure the students have those resources made available to them, and I just wanted some clarity on how that would work. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Leidinger, followed by Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Back to the P20 partnership. Does it currently have military members on that partnership?
Mr. Chair, Representative Leidinger, no, it does not. This bill would include a member representative from military installation that would be appointed by the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard.
And that's only when dealing with this subject that they'll be a member of that partnership.
Mr. Corbett.
Mr. Chair, Representative Leidinger, it doesn't distinguish between when they would be involved and not be involved with the partnership. I think they would be a full member just like anybody else on the commission would also be on the partnership and would also be involved in, you know, discussions about non-compact related issues.
Good.
I think that would be appropriate.
Yes.
Mr. Corbett.
And then I'll be short. I just want to comment on the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon involvement and the way you've got it written in here. This is a good thing, and the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon program is a qualified success, and you realize this is started here in Minnesota, and it is being trying to be exported around the country. I don't know where we are with that exportation of the way we do business here. Now this, so this is something that has started up here, and it's really gotten communities involved heavily with the National Guard, the active duty, any military forces within the community. So it's a community-centric program. I applaud you for bringing them into this, because you could have very easily have ignored that whole that huge organization. They're the ones that you're going to see, I think, eventually pick this up and really be the major players in this. That's what I think might happen. But I wanted to let you know, this is something started here. It's being exported. It'd be great if we could hear how are we doing on this exportation to other states. Are they picking this up?
I think it's a question to some of our previous
we don't need an answer here today.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I just learned a few things here, Representative Lottinger. Thank you for that. Mr. Cortez? I thought you maybe had a comment on this. All right. Thank you. Any further questions? Anyone else in the audience? I'm sorry. Representative Erickson, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know I was a little invisible for a while, but I had pressing business in my office. I'm sorry. Representative Sawatsky, have there been any reports done since this has been in place since 2006 that would show us the impact it's had in member states to the state?
Representative
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, I will refer to the experts on this topic.
Representative Mr. Chair, we have an annual report that goes into our issues that we deal with each year and gives a summary of the activities and problems we've encountered. And one of the reasons to have the commission is so that we can meet periodically, at least once a year, and then other times telephonically and otherwise, to go through the types of problems that we are encountering. And so, yes, we can provide that information to you, and we have a website that can be made available. In fact, I think there's a handout that we provided in the form of a brochure that we'll give you our web address, and we'd invite you to take a look there, because I think you'll see some of the statistical data.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, sir. That's very helpful. And, Mr. Chair, do we know what the fee is that the state would be charged?
$2,000, Representative, Mr. Chair, and that is based on $1 per student, and we slightly adjusted that because the $2,000 that Minnesota would pay is a threshold amount that we imposed as a commission by agreement. Because, among other things, that money defrays the cost of your representative traveling to a meeting once a year.
Thank you, Mr.
Mr. Corte, on that issue, I assume that the department will arrange for our meeting our financial obligation.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. We would not be asking for an additional appropriation under this bill. It would be funded out of the agency general operating budget.
Well, thank you. Representative Leidinger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to go back once again to the membership of the P20 Education Partnership. And the way you read that, the way I read that paragraph under 2.7, it's you will have a military representative there only when conducting the business under the section 127.8.85. We heard from you, Mr. Chair, and others. I think it makes sense that be changed and have a military member on that part in that partnership at all times. It's too difficult to have a part-time military member. He comes in just for one little thing. He doesn't understand what has transpired on that in other meetings. So I ask that be changed as this bill travels.
Representative Sawatsky, I would ask you just to visit that language. I'm comfortable with it. I think it's written in a way that is inclusive, but let's just make sure that we're not doing something unintentional here.
So. Mr. Chair, we will work together in doing that.
Well, and if I could just, it is important, you know, that we have a member, and I think we all agree on that.
Mm-hmm. We do.
But it's a it's a major enough issue where that person should probably be in that and be involved at all times. I'll repeat that.
Well, and Representative Leidinger, I'm just fuzzy memory recalling when we passed the 2009 bill. I think we did. I think in the language we do delineate individual organizations. And I may be wrong about that, but let's make sure. Let's visit with each other and make sure we understand the intent here has been stated several times. Very well. Anyone else who wish to testify on behalf or against the bill? If not, then Representative Sawatsky renews her motion that House File 2569 be re-referred to the Committee on Government Operations. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Sawatsky, and thank you for the testifiers who have traveled through 9 inches of snow from New Hampshire and other parts of the world to be with us this morning. Are we doing more? Yes. Representative Morgan, House File 2396.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I would like to move House File 2396 to be re-referred to the Health and Human Services Policy Committee.
That is correct. Representative Morgan moves that House File 2396 be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Policy. Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members, the previous bill from Representative Sawatsky helped to deal with some issues for the children of military families. My bill is one that helps us deal with some issues that often come up with the adults in military families. House File 2396 provides a mechanism to better meet the needs of current and recent active duty members of the military and their families who are relocated to Minnesota from other states. It instructs licensing boards to establish a process for expedited licensing and temporary licenses to allow otherwise qualified people to continue to work in their profession as their lives are impacted by service to the military. With me again, Mr. Dempsey from the Department of Defense is here, and he'll talk a little bit about the bill, and then we can answer some questions.
Welcome back, Mr. Dempsey.
Hello again, Mr. Chair, committee members. Thank you again for hearing me on this issue. I can tell you unequivocally, this issue is the number one issue in the Department of Defense right now. We have been hearing for years, coming from our military families and now service members, that they train their entire life to do something while they're in the military, and once they take off the uniform and they go to work in civilian clothes, they're not qualified to do that. The licensing bill that's before you simply asks the state to look at the qualifications of the military member and the spouse in this case as well, and service members have separated less than 2 years. Look at their qualifications to see if they're qualified. Yeah. Consider that with a temporary or possibly a license that will allow them an expedited licensing process. If they need education, fine, let them know how much education, et cetera, they need for that. I'll give you a quick scenario. Not too long ago, I was at a VA center, and I was conversing with a EMT, emergency medical technician, who was a Marine, combat veteran Marine, 12 years in the service, and had performed numerous life-saving events while in combat. Due to military injuries and recharacterization of his service, he had a medical discharge. Loved being an EMT, wanted to do nothing more. So he goes down to his local state and applies to be an EMT with the local city in which he grew up. Couldn't get a job. He goes to the hospital. Hospital says, we'll start you out. The hospital says, but only thing you're qualified to do right now is empty bedpans. We feel that's not only unjust, but terribly wrong, that that consideration is not being taken for that individual or other individuals like him. Another scenario, the Army has a plethora of semi-drivers that aren't qualified to drive a truck when they put on a civilian clothes and try to get a job as a civilian semi-tractor trailer driver. But they may have their entire life or history as a military truck driver driving who knows what, hazardous materials, munitions, etc. down the roads as a truck driver. And I can go on and go on with this. And to flip the coin a little bit to the spouse side, 64% of military spouses with licenses are working outside of their licensed career field simply because of lack of transferability or portability of that license that they have, whether it be a nail technician, hair technician, lawyer, whatever. All we're asking again is that what this bill states is that we expedite the license or we allow them a temporary license while they fulfill the state's obligations in order to become fully licensed by the state. Right now, unemployment's a big issue. It is with everybody in every state. Unfortunately, the military in age 24 to 35, the unemployment rate is more than double the civilian rate. With the recent drawdown that was mentioned last week by the Secretary, needless to say, further reductions in forces are going to be upon us. It's not a lose-lose situation, though, because we are turning loose a myriad of well-trained, well-educated, well-disciplined individuals and their spouses that can become viable members of licensed boards here in the state of Minnesota and other states. In closing, I'd just simply like to thank you, the chair and the committee, for reviewing this and considering this. And I can't tell you what it's going to do to add in the quality of life of those transferring out of the service and possibly returning back home here to Minnesota. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Dempsey. And Representative Morgan, this bill is going to move through several committees because obviously we have several jurisdictions where licenses are being issued for professional validation. And I think for us, the most preeminent issue has to do with the Board of Teaching and the issuing of teacher licensures. I want to be sure, and perhaps this might be a question and reflection for Mr. Dempsey as well. I want to make sure that what we're not doing with this is compromising the quality of those licenses. Obviously, we're placing professionals in classrooms with young children, right? We have high standards, and we're continuing to push high standards in regards to the professionals we entrust to teach our students. I just want to make sure that the language here doesn't wind up either intentionally or unintentionally undermining the level of rigor and high quality expectations that we have of our teachers in the state of Minnesota. And that the language allows, if you will, for a process by which our Board of Teaching can make intelligent decisions about expediting those license applications balanced with that need to make sure that there's a good, strong, quality professional, even under the temporary status, if you will, that will be able to be placed in a classroom. So I guess I'm kind of looking just for the record here, but also any information in terms of how the bill was structured, that would, provide us with that sense of, security relative to this question.
Mr. Chair, perhaps I'll let Mr. Dempsey go first, and then I'll maybe add something at the end.
And Mr. Morgan, perhaps, I'm not sure if the Board of Teaching is in the room, but perhaps we may want to hear from them briefly as well.
We may as well. Thank you,
Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I can simply state that what you just said is exactly what the Department of Defense wants. We don't want to degrade anything that the state of Minnesota has in place. That's why we don't want to usurp any of the licensing boards that are in place right now. We want every licensed member to apply just like anyone else would through that board to ensure that the board agrees, yes, this person is qualified, either for expedited or temporary or whatever. And if not, what that person needs, simply state what that person needs in order to become qualified.
And Mr. Chair, I would simply add, my perception and my involvement in this process is that nobody in the military wants to have a lower standard or special treatment. We heard that in the testimony on Representative Swatsky's bill. They just want to have an expedited process so that families who are making a special sacrifice for our country can come into our state, and folks who have been employed as teachers, as far as this committee is concerned, in other states, can have an opportunity to get into the classroom as soon as possible and have the least possible disruption in their families' lives and contribute the most they can to our state in their service to our country and our state.
I do have several questions, but I'm wondering, before I join, if in fact someone from the Board of Teaching is in the room. Okay, I don't see anyone here. We currently have interim director of Board of Teaching, and when we had a permanent director, hopefully we'll get there soon, they were constantly in the room with us. Yes. As well they should have been. But you know what, I'll make sure I circle around the Board of Teaching on this. All right, so we have several questions. Representative Dabney, Representative Erdahl, Representative Kreisha, Representative Sandra Erickson, Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm Representative Morgan, I'm just trying to get my brain, particularly around the spousal part. There may be some issues with military members and the differing training, for instance, between an MP and a police officer for a civilian population. But the spousal piece, and I'm thinking of my brother and his wife. My brother was U.S. State Department. So similar in that served around the world, in and out of the country, serving the United States. His wife was a licensed teacher initially in the state of Wisconsin, later in some other states, state of Virginia, where they resided when they lived in the U.S., and often taught overseas at the local international school that their children would attend. If it had been military rather than State Department, because your bill is limited to members of the military, does that and they came here, does this bill essentially establish reciprocity for teachers licensed in any state to then teach here in Minnesota if they're the spouse of a military member or a member of the military themselves?
I would not say reciprocity in this case, but it certainly allows them the ability to go to the state board and request for a license based on their past experience and their current license they hold in another state. They still have to meet, or they have to be approved through the teaching board, in this case, of Minnesota, before they're authorized either expedited or temporary licensing.
Sir Morgan.
And Mr. Chair, if I could add to that, Representative Dabney, what we're trying to do is recognize that people, as particularly as it relates to this committee and teaching, that active duty military or recently served military and their spouses who come to Minnesota and have experience teaching in other states, they have experience teaching in other states. They're not coming here and saying, oh, I think I want to be a teacher. These are folks who have a license to teach in other states, that while we may have a different set of standards, we want to create a special opportunity for them to get an expedited temporary licensure and then an expedited full licensure process. So whatever it is they have to do to meet the standards that we have in Minnesota, different, higher, whatever, that they have a process that is expedited and helps them come into their new state through no choice of their own, in many cases, and serve their professional, provide their professional service to the students of our state. So we are not trying to provide any reciprocity. Minnesota will still have its high standards for teaching, but there will be an expedited process for these special circumstances of these people who are serving our country.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just trying to get my brains around the implementation. Thank you.
And Representative Morgan, the language on line 121 on the issue of temporary licenses does spell out that the board shall establish a procedure to issue temporary licensures. We later do rulemaking. I would fully expect that our boards would create procedures that are consistent with the standards that we have in law and in rule. Representative Erdahl and then Representative Kreisha.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Mr. Dempsey, Representative Morgan. My understanding from the bill and your explanations are that this affects all licenses issued by the state of Minnesota?
No, sir, that's not correct. There are there are, Mr. Chair, Representative Erdahl, there are certain licenses we realize that are unique to Minnesota. For example, one would be law. We realize there's Minnesota law involved that would be unique to gaining that. And same thing with the medical licenses as well. We realize that the doctors go through a certain requirement that in the state of Minnesota that is unique to Minnesota, whereas it may not be in another state. So I believe the bill, correct me if I'm wrong, Representative, but I believe it states which licenses we don't want. Is that correct, or am I miss? I apologize. This is my sixth state this week. I've been in, so I may have my states mixed up.
And I suspect each bill might be different in each state. Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Erdahl. At the beginning of the bill, it directs each state agency and professional licensing board defined in Section 214.01, Subdivisions 2 and 3. I don't have in my head right now the list of all of those boards that apply to that. Certainly the Board of Teaching is one, which is why we're here. We'll go to Health and Human Services Policy next. The Board of Nursing and some other boards that are involved with that committee are there. So I believe it is true that it does not include every licensing board. I do not have a list for you right now. Perhaps somebody on the research side of things in the room might be looking through that section of law right now. It could better answer your question if you'd like an answer now.
And Representative Morgan, as you move forward, you might want to have that list.
I'm taking notes right now,
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Erdahl.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Morgan. As the chair said, that would be good to know. I was just trying to get some clarification so that we understand if there are some that are excluded. One that I'm kind of interested in that's, you know, not related so much to education, but driver's licenses. I've received phone calls from constituents who were military spouses and military members who had trouble with their driver's licenses through the military. So,
Mr. Chair, after your, I'll have you comment quickly. Then I'll ask our legal counsel. She actually has the list. So, Mr. Dempsey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Erdahl, we too have been getting a mass of phone calls, and I can tell you we've taken that up as an initiative for next year to look at, based on the volume that we've received over the past 6 months. So we may have a fix in the future on that license issue.
Thank you.
Critically important. Thank you, Representative Erdahl. Ms. Larson, perhaps you can share with us. I imagine you have the list with 214.01.
Mr. Chairman, members, the bill, House File 2396, in the first subdivision on page 1, line 11, refers to a section of statute, 214.01, subdivisions 2 and 3. Subdivision 2 in that section lists all kinds of health-related licensing boards. It's quite a long list. I won't take up the committee's time with all of them, but it includes, for example, Board of Examiners of Nursing Home Administrators, the Board of Medical Practice, the Board of Nursing, the Board of Optometry, the Board of Psychology, the Board of Marriage and Family Therapy, of Social Work, Dietetics and Nutrition, and the list is longer than that. Subdivision 3 includes many non-health-related licensing boards, including, among others, the Board of Teaching, the Board of Cosmetologist Examiners, the Board of Assessors, the Board of Architecture Engineering, Land Surveying, Landscape Architecture, Geoscience, Interior Design. And again, there are other boards included in Subdivision 3 listed in the statute.
And Ms. Larson, put you on the spot here. I take it that 214.01, Subdivision 2 and 3, is not wholly inclusive of every licensing body authorized in state statute?
Mr. Chairman, I am not an expert on the licensing boards in the state.
Okay. Yeah, so that might be the question, Representative Morgan, you'll want to have as part of the list. I suspect members are going to want to know who's not covered as well as who is covered.
Who's not covered,
Who's
Mr.
not
Chair.
Covered by this? Yeah.
I'll look into it. I would like to add this, Mr. Chair. There are three authors right now of this same bill who are taking it. I believe it had to go through seven committees, and I'm taking it to two of them. So as I prepared for this, I focused on the two that I'm taking them to. So my answer to that might be all those other committees. So, but thank you.
Thank you. Representative Krisha and Representative Erickson Saga.
Thank you, Chair Mariani, and thank you, Representative Morgan and Mr. Dempsey, for bringing this up. This is a very, very important issue. I was going to call that out in Bill House File 2365. Mary Murphy's bringing the same bill forward, and we heard that in State Gov. So a lot of those questions have been addressed. But being germane to this committee, a couple of things that I'm curious about, and I'll ask to the chair, does this open alternative pathways to obtaining a teaching license? That has been a very sensitive topic, and whether you look at Teach for America or many of the other alternative pathways, that this may come into question, and so I just wanted to see if you've prepared for that.
Representative Moore.
Mr. Chair, Representative Krisha, obviously in the state of Minnesota, we do already have alternative pathways for licensure established in law. This is a process that is very specific. It is very focused on the families of active service military or people who have recently left the military. So we are trying to target a special population. We are trying to maintain the high standards but provide a means for those people to transition more easily. For a lot of families, this is important income. The spouse's income is very important. Sometimes they have children in college that they're trying to support, and they're transferred to a new base, and they need that second income to afford to send their child to college or whatever the cost of the family may be. So I think this is very special. We do already have some alternative pathways. This certainly is an alternative pathway, but it is a very focused and targeted alternative pathway for a unique group who are serving our country.
And Representative Morgan, the bill begins with the expedited process, which, you know, tells me that we're talking about not changing standards or but expediting within the state legal framework. It then goes on to talk about temporary licenses. It would seem to me to be inconsistent, and I'm just kind of thinking out loud here a little bit, Representative Krisha, to be a little inconsistent to have an expedited process without saying just change everything, and do a temporary process and then change everything. And so I think, therefore, again, the language on 121 that doesn't just in state law say we're going to have temporary licenses, period, a process for. Then we have a rulemaking process here, and this is where it would be helpful to have had the Board of Teaching here. It's not your fault, but, you know, just to get them on the record in terms of how they would proceed with this. So I think we should definitely circle back with them. Part of what we're doing here, Representative Krisha, is kind of laying out legislative intent.
Yep.
as we move the bill here. I'm not hearing legislative intent here to undermine our standards of care, quality, and rigor, you know, all those parameters that we currently have in state law. And so it's just important for us to state that on the record. Representative Krisha.
Thank you, Chair Mariani, and thank you for that clarification. I'd actually like to expand that further into a question of the veterans issue is very important to us, and I think that we all are very sensitive to that. There's no question about it. But as for the purpose of this committee and what we're chartered with, I ask the question, is it our goal to put the most qualified teacher out there or to expedite a special class? And I absolutely understand the intent of what you're trying to do. I understand the families and the economic needs and all of that. But I also understand the absolute certainty of making sure that we put the very best we can out there because of the ramifications on those teachers and what we know about good teachers versus poor teachers. So I want to make sure that we're having that conversation.
Mr. Chair, Representative Krisha, I am a teacher. I value my professional license. I value the standards we have for teachers in the state of Minnesota. I would not be carrying a bill that I thought sacrificed the standards we have for teachers in the state of Minnesota. I believe that these folks are folks who have been teaching, licensed teachers in other states, coming to the state through no choice of their own oftentimes,
And I think under these special circumstances, targeted circumstances, we can provide a process to provide them a temporary license to continue their career as quickly as possible, and an expedited process to make sure that they are meeting the high standards for teachers that we must maintain in the state of Minnesota. And I think they would expect nothing less than to come in and demonstrate that they can meet those high standards.
And thank you. And last question, and thank you, Chair Mariani. And I'll support your bill. Don't. And there's no question there, because as a former educator as well. But I just want to make sure that we are having this conversation. And the last question that I wonder about is, with the importance of our integrity of teachers and seniority and all that that has come up, where does Ed Minnesota stand on this?
Mr. Chair, I have not spoken directly. I have not heard directly from them about that. I don't know if anybody from Education Minnesota is here right now. I have heard indirectly that with the language that ensures that they will be assured and through the process that they'll be highly qualified teachers, and that they are fine with this expedited process for this special group of individuals.
Thank you.
Representative Kreisha, Representative Morgan, I don't want to do damage to this bill. I think we all, or rather, I don't want to do damage to the timeline of this bill. I mean, this is sort of the nature of this legislative session where, you know, we have 2 weeks to get things out of here, right? But Representative Kreisha, in speaking with legal counsel, there does seem to be some ambiguity, particularly members, when you if you turn over the bill to line 213, the very last sentence there, that and this is on the temporary license period, the individual shall complete the full application procedure as required by applicable law. And so the question arises, well, which law are we talking about? And when, you know, so is it applicable if it's a law from Tennessee, for instance? I don't think that's the, I know that's not the intent here, but I think it's, you know, we are writing law.
Yep.
And I think it's really important that we be not ambiguous, unless there's a real darn good reason to be. But I don't think there is one here. And so, Representative Morgan, I'm wondering if we may not want to hold on to this long enough to be able to develop a fix for that language. Representative Morgan.
Mr. Chair, may I say this? Like I said, this is traveling three different directions with three different authors, and it will be united at some point along the way. All three authors are committed to working with the committees their bills pass through to make any changes along the way that needs to happen. I am happy if, honoring the timeline and the time frame that we're working within, if we do not have a fix that we can think ourselves through today, I'm happy to fix it in HHS policy at the next stop. Because obviously if there's something about the word applicable, that's not something that would only apply to the Board of Teaching. That could be something that could apply to all the other boards as well. I think all three authors are committed to honoring the work of the committees and the concerns of the committees as this bill moves through the process. So I'm happy to work with anybody to help make it a better bill.
Yeah, so members, let me suggest this, but I'm going to open this up for committee because I really want committee ownership, you know, broad ownership of this. We have a 24-hour rule in regards to amendments. I've been loath to, you know, cross over in a line. We certainly have done that. Typically, when we do it because there's broad agreement, you know, from both sides of the aisle on that. I don't think we have language right now. I don't think, Representative Morgan, it would hurt our timeline to revisit this issue at tomorrow's hearing. I think we can do it very quickly. We would still be able to move the bill in the same amount of time that it would take if we moved it today. That would give us some time to come up with, you know, better language that could then inform, you know, the other bills as well. We can speak. We would most likely not meet the 24-hour amendment rule unless we hang around till 11:30 tomorrow, which I suppose we can do. So I guess what I'm looking for is goodwill from all members, particularly my colleagues on the other side of the aisle about using that approach, coming in with language tomorrow and saying whenever we move that language that we're okay with that, and let's get the bill out of here. Professor Morgan, does that sound like a plan?
Mr. Chair, I just spoke with my timeline guru, and she suggested that that would work fine if we could lay this over to tomorrow. They come out of nowhere sometimes, Mr. Chair. So,
all right. So, why, Representative Krisha, does that make sense to you?
Can echo your.
Yeah, Representative Erickson, is that a good approach?
The approach is okay, but may I speak now?
And please, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure. First of all, Representative Morgan, did you talk to the Board of Teaching? Since this bill is here?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, I have not personally spoken with the Board of Teaching about this bill, no.
Thank you. Because, Mr. Chair and members, I'm not sure this is applicable to a teacher licensure, because when someone out of state applies to teach in Minnesota, we have a detailed and sometimes cumbersome process that's used by the licensing division to determine whether or not that applicant can receive either a temporary or a permanent teaching license. So you really need to have a conversation with the interim director of the Board of Teaching to find out if this is even applicable in this area, because those things are, those processes are already in place. We do not have reciprocity, unfortunately, but we do have a process, and the licensing, the person in charge of licensing goes through a very thorough examination. There are always some courses that have to be taken that are required, perhaps, but not a temporary license could be issued, or a community expert, or a waiver could be applied for. So there are many processes that the Board of Teaching uses, but you need to have a serious conversation with Erin Doan and find out what her take is on this. Because I don't want to discourage you, but I'm just not sure that a teaching license is applicable under this language.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, thank you very much. Let me remind everybody that this bill is not establishing a process. This bill is directing the boards, the professional boards and the agencies, to establish the process. So I think that is absolutely built into the bill to have that conversation and to get the boards themselves to do the work providing this guideline or framework that we're trying to achieve. So thank you very much, Representative Erickson. Absolutely.
Thank you. Good clarification. Representative Russo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the fact that we have a process for out-of-state licensure maybe isn't necessarily a drawback with regard to this bill, because that could mean it's as simple as the Board of Teaching says, we already did that. However, I think it would be useful for the Board of Teaching to have the conversation among themselves about, are there aspects that are peculiar to military families that they may need to establish some sort of auxiliary processes to accommodate. And one thing that comes to mind is we wouldn't normally bend over backward to accommodate someone who had, say, an out-of-state license that was expired. But you may have a military person whose spouse has not been able to keep up their continuing education requirements or something like that, depending on what their deployment has been, or the member of the military themselves. And so that it would be useful for the Board of Teaching to look at that whole set of circumstances that would arise and see if there are things that make sense. But I do want to make sure we pay attention to the fact that throughout this bill is the phrase qualified individual. And so there's nothing in this bill that requires us to lower our standards for anything. It's just to look at how we apply those standards to people that have these particular circumstances.
Thank you, Representative Russo. Representative Morgan, I think what we're going to do now is lay this over. We'll come back to it roughly first thing tomorrow morning. We'll have some language particularly on page 2. And what I'm going to ask is for several of you all kind of to put your heads together. If I can recruit you, Representative Krisha, and with our legal counsel, with you, Representative Morgan, I think we could probably do this relatively quickly, but let's make sure it's good language, and frankly, it might be the language that then informs the others as well. So, and I should have caught this earlier when I looked at this bill a couple days ago, so my apologies for not zeroing in on that. So with that, the chair lays over House File 2396. Mr. Dempsey, thank you.
Thank you
so much.
Chair.
Thank you for your presence, and also thank you for your important work across the country.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. We'll hopefully finish this up tomorrow morning. Thank you.
Absolutely. Members, we're running out of time. However, the next two bills do have, the authors of those bills have brought folks from a distance. And so what I would like to do is hear from those folks. We will take up these bills when we. Our intent is to recess, and then we'll come back this evening. I think we're shooting for about 6 o'clock, or the call of the chair. We obviously have some big things in the chamber to go over, and if they go over smooth, we'll be back this evening. If they don't, we probably won't be back this evening. But at this point, that's how I'm going to proceed. And I do want to honor the fact that some folks have traveled a distance to be here. And I think that's for both of the bills. And so I'm going to start with you, Representative Detmer. And if you can do just a very quick explanation of the bill, we'll have you do a fuller explanation of it, and then have you bring your witness forward. And then I'm going to lay over your bill. We'll go to Representative Bly. We'll do the same process. And then we'll come back and have full discussion and descriptions of the bill. So, Representative Detmer, I'm going to move your bill. It's House File
2012.
So the chair moves that House File 2012 be referred to the General Register. Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Chair Mirani. And I also have the A2 amendment. We should probably put
Why
that.
Why do we do that? The chair moves the A2 amendment.
Yeah, this was brought. This was brought to me by the Minnesota State High School League.
So right, and so this puts the bill in the shape that the author wishes us to have. And I want to thank the author for working with the league to develop this language. Members, all in favor of the A2 amendment? Please say aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The bill is amended before us. Representative Dempsey.
Chair Mirani, I'll just quickly give you just a quick overview. I think most of you have information on this bill, but it adds students with disabilities who transfer between public schools as a reasonable accommodation to reduce barriers of educational access. As an exception to the Minnesota State High School League transfer rule, which generally makes an athlete, in this case, transfer between high schools, changing their residence ineligible for a year. They would have to sit out a year. And as most of you know, I spent 34 years as an educator. I worked very closely with the Special Education Department in our school, and also, you know, worked with the IEP teams putting together 504 programs for students. And I know one thing that was brought to my attention is that many times these types of students have some very positive things going for them, and many times it's their ability to participate in extracurricular activities. So I brought forward a couple parents that are constituents of mine from Stillwater, and if they would come forward and just give their testimony.
Very well. Why don't we hear from our citizens? And I would only ask of my good fellow citizens to be brief. I have just been notified that a very powerful committee is going to be moving into this room in a few minutes, and so I want to get through our testimony. I don't want to run afoul of a powerful committee. So, welcome. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Deb Van Cly. This is my husband, Lonnie Van Cly. He's been involved in law enforcement for 27 years. I've been involved in public education for 20 years. And 17 of those years have also been as a varsity coach. We have seen firsthand a lack of understanding that occurs when one cannot visually see a disability. In fact, to be honest, it wasn't until we were able to see our son through his own lens that we could understand the impact ADHD could play on one's life. I've worked with students in class sizes of 35 to 40 on a daily basis, and our son's pre-existing condition did not allow him to excel in classes of this size and led to conditions that were intolerable. Being able to participate in sports at a high level has always been a place our son could excel. Being part of a team with same-age peers is what motivated him. And being part of something bigger than himself, where his self-confidence could continue to grow. Our son's choice, and it was his choice, of wanting to attend a different school was based solely on his educational experience, and wanting a fresh start in a smaller environment is what he wanted and needed. Moving to a smaller school has decreased his anxiety and mood, but more importantly, moving to a smaller school and a new school has allowed him to improve academically, socially, and emotionally. A common model I often shared with my athletes was that sports teaches a lot of things, and being involved in athletics has afforded our children the opportunity to deal with adversity, be a good teammate, and persevere. Some of our children's best life lessons have come from playing a sport, being able to dig deeper for their aspirations, understanding that life is not always fair, but more importantly, to finish the race that they have started. Being included at a varsity level of participation has had a strong positive impact for our son, and are encouraged that this bill will allow all students to participate at a level that does not discriminate because of their disability. Thank you.
So, thank you, Miss, and I want to make sure I get the pronunciation correct, Van Cly?
Correct.
Thank you. Thank you, and thank you as well, sir. Important story, powerful story, and so it's vitally important that we know that the provisions before us are real-life provisions that make a real difference in people's lives. So thank you for your testimony and best wishes to your family and to your son. Thank you. Representative Detmer, we're going to lay the bill over. Hopefully the plan is to be back this evening and we'll be able to act at that point on the bill. And so at this point, the chair will lay over. I want to make sure I get the right number.
2012.
The chair will lay House File 2012 on and, lay over.
Mr. Chair, I need to be back here tonight then?
Yeah, that would probably be good.
Okay, I will.
Bill's laid over.
I will.
Members, we're going to recess at this point, and we will hopefully be back this evening at 6 o'clock and or the call of the chair, so keep your ears open. Oh, please save your materials if you can. So we stand in recess.